Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door.
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio, 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au. This program is podcast, so if the local drug meth maker next door knocks on your door and wants a cup of sugar for his lab, don't despair. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Now, Dale, I've been told to be nice to you today.
Oh, you don't have to be, Joe.
Well, I know I don't have to be, but I've decided I was. I walked in. Nadine was, our guest Nadine was sitting in the, and they said to me, it's Dale's birthday today.
Bless.
And I thought, so?
Yeah, I know, right?
And then I thought, well, Dale, you've been here for many, many years and you've kind of made me look good, which is, which is not easy. So look, I have actually bought you a gift in the 15 minutes I had, and I'm going to hand it over.
Yeah,
it's not the bag. I've got to give the bag back.
Oh, my goodness.
It's what's in the bag. This is all.
Oh, wow.
This is yours.
You didn't have to, Joe.
I just wanted to match your tattoo. That's all.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes. Oh, goodness gracious.
It's a Palestinian scarf from Palestine.
Thank you. That's so thoughtful.
I didn't know.
I promised myself I wasn't going to cry.
Oh, do you want to tell them how old you are?
Oh, yeah, I'm 46 today. Yeah. Never be the same. Now I've got the key to the door. Never been 46 before. Anyway, onward and upward.
Thank you. Thank you, Dale.
Thank you.
No, look, Dale. People don't understand. Without you, I'm nothing.
Oh.
You know.
All contrary, mon ami, but
Tell me not to touch the microphone because it makes a noise. You put the microphone in front of my thing. You put the chair under my butt and you say, go, Joe. What can I do? Okay. Now, we do have a guest, and she's a bit concerned about what she's let herself in for. Nadine Rutter. R-U-T-T-E-R?
That's the one, yeah.
N-A-D-I-N-E.
That's it.
That's good. Nadine, look. Just tell us what decade you were born, just to give people an orientation about how old you are. You don't have to tell them exactly how old you are.
I was born in the 90s.
90s? Mm-hmm. Early 90s or late 90s?
Early 90s.
No, I thought so. Okay. All right. Now, this is a very simple thing. I ask questions, you answer them. You don't answer them. We have an ejection seat. And we
shoot through the roof.
And we send you to hell.
Okay.
Very simple.
We send you to commercial radio.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
We have a direct link to 3AW. and if you haven't done any mortal sins, we'll send you the government guild at ABC. So they're your two options. Now, Nadine, what's the first thing you remember about being on planet Earth?
I think my earliest memory, we used to go to a toddler group. My mum used to take us to this toddler group when we were kids.
Very 90s.
Yep, very 90s indeed. And I remember running around the park. It's called Spencer Park in Christchurch in New Zealand.
Christchurch.
Yes. Right. Yep.
Ooh,
yep.
Go in. Yeah. Go on.
And being in the sun and being in the pool and wearing this awful hat that my mum used to make
floppy,
me wear.
A floppy?
Not a floppy hat. It was one of those ones with the thing that comes down the back. And even better, it was neon pink. My mum worked in a pharmacy and it had a sunscreen brand on it. It said like Lee Tan or something on the front. It was a good look. It was a good look.
I am so pleased. I lived in the day when having a suntan and peeling was normal. Where we didn't use hats. Where we'd come in with strips of skin and we'd rip rip it off our arm and hold it up. Those days are gone.
Try and get the biggest bit.
Exactly. You're right. Do you remember those days, Dad?
I do.
So you were born in New Zealand.
I was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you going to hold that against me?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at the minute. No way would I hold that against you. I have known some interesting New Zealanders, and I might talk about one of them later on without mentioning his name. Mm-hmm. Because he's a fraudster, but a very good fraudster.
Well, if you're going to do it, you want to do it well, right?
And because he was a New Zealander, he had no, you know, he just did it well. I was very impressed. He was an artist. So going back to you, so how long did you last in Christchurch for?
I was in Christchurch for a long time. So I was there up until just after high school.
After high school. Which year was that?
2011. So the year of the big Christchurch earthquake was my senior year at high school.
You finished high school in 2011?
Yes, yeah.
I feel old. I feel ancient.
Sorry for doing that to you.
All right, so you've been through a lot.
Let's just skipped a bit.
No. I want to go back. I was just interested in that. Now, the name Rutter, where does that come from?
That's an English name.
English name.
Yeah.
And what was the meaning of the name, do you know?
No, I don't have a clue.
No, Rutters. You didn't catch rats or something.
I don't know, quite possibly. I wouldn't have any idea.
What part of England? You don't know.
I don't know. No, sorry.
Hold on, this is a bit embarrassing, but are your parents still alive?
Yes.
Have you ever thought of asking them?
Well, it's just mum that's involved. So, and the name's still from Dad's side.
From Dad's side. All right, well, we won't go into that. Okay, so you went to toddler school.
Yeah, it was like a kids' club kind of thing, and all the mums would bring their kids along and they'd run around and swim
And then you graduated to preschool.
Yes, yeah. I went to a Montessori, actually. Flash toddler.
Flash toddler. Montessori. Mm-hmm. How long were you there for?
I have no idea. A year or two. I remember learning, like, some Japanese words. I can't remember what the words were.
Ichiban, arigato.
The word for duck, I remember.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, and some colours. But that's sort of all I remember from my
And then what, your mother said this is enough and pulled you out of it, or what?
I don't know. I think after that I must have started at regular school.
Which is where?
I went to Windsor Primary School in Christchurch.
In Christchurch.
Yes, yeah.
Are they, I'm a bit confused. This is what, the early 2000s or late 1990s you would have gone to primary school? Late 1990s.
Late 90s, yeah.
Was it a very monocultural type of school, or did you have kids from different areas?
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of a mix, but Christchurch in the 90s was still pretty monocultural. It's more sort of multicultural up north in New Zealand, and I think the further south you get, the less.
So are there fewer and fewer Maori people as you go south? Or?
I mean, there are definitely more up north. Right. I mean, there are communities of Maori everywhere. But I think there's a higher density of them.
But so your school, I assume your primary school was idyllic?
It was a nice school.
A nice school.
Yeah.
You can't say much. A nice school.
It was nice enough, yeah.
People didn't call you names and no.
I mean, I think everyone gets called names in primary school.
What were you called?
I think people used to make fun of me for being a redhead.
Yeah.
Definitely got that because it was a lot like redder back then, so it's faded out with age a little bit. So people used to make fun of me because my mum made me high-ride my culottes and tuck my shirt into them. So people used to pick on me for that too. Yeah.
Harry high pants.
All of that kind of thing.
The female version.
Yes.
The female
version. Yeah, high-riding.
High-riding. That's a bit suggestive. Should I go to that part? No, thank you, Dad. She keeps me honest. All right, so did you find in primary school that there was anything in particular that interested you, any subject or sport or anything, or just middle of the road?
I was one of those over-involved people.
Over-involved?
Yeah,
so what did you do?
So I was a kid, a bit of everything.
Well, your school captain?
Not in primary school. I don't think we really had that. I used to do all sorts of stuff, like choir. I can't sing, so I don't know why I ever did choir, but, gave it a jam. I played the flute, so I was in our little, school orchestras and bands and things like that.
This is primary school.
Yeah. I tried all sorts of sports, and I'm also terrible at that. So maybe that's just why I kept rotating through all of these things, because I couldn't find anything I was actually good at. Drama classes, the whole horse ride, soccer, netball, cricket. Yeah,
I'm exhausted just listening to you. This is. If I have a heart attack or triple O, thanks. I'm just exhausted listening to this woman. And this is at primary school.
This was at primary school.
Overachiever.
I don't know, because like I say, I never really stuck to anything. I think just over-involved.
Over-involved, not over-involved. Was there any particular subject you liked? Is there anything that caught your fancy?
In primary school? I used to read a lot in primary school, so I think
it's
probably
dangerous. What, real books?
Yeah. I actually read a lot of John Marsden in primary school.
Yes,
he's an Aussie author, right?
Yes,
all of those Tomorrow When the War Began books. I remember reading those.
In primary school?
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. So you're able to read and write.
Yeah,
and
I know.
A bit of arithmetic.
I mean, at least I can do that, right?
Well, no, this is a primary school. I'm impressed. Took me ages. So you leave primary school.
Yes.
And obviously you go to high school.
Well, we actually...
Don't have high school.
We do have high school in New Zealand,
yes.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
But before high school, there's intermediate. So you do 2 years in another school. And then go on to high school.
So you don't have the little kiddies in grade 7 mixing with the year 12 and the year 12 bullying them.
That's
exactly
it. Well,
there's no fun then, is there? I remember when you went to year 7, you got the shit kicked out of you. And you used to dream, this is in the 60s, of getting to year 12 and kick the shit out of the year 7. So New Zealand resolved this problem.
Yeah, I guess so.
They did.
Yeah. Intermediate, they call it, for year 7 and 8.
Kind of over-involved in year 7 and 8?
I continued to be over-involved in year 7 and 8. Same sort of stuff, the music, the drama, the sports that I was terrible at.
Was this a public school or a private school?
It was public school.
Public school.
Yes.
And then, so did kids leave at year 8 or they just kind of graduate to the big place on the hill?
Yeah, so year 7 and 8 and then you go off to a different high school.
Right.
Yeah. Yep, so new school, new uniform.
New uniform.
Whole thing.
Ooh,
yeah.
Ooh. Where'd you go?
I went to a school called Marian College.
Uh-huh.
It was in Christchurch East. It's now in the city because the site that it was located got earthquake damaged. So,
all right. Going back, so you went to Marian College.
Yes.
Is that a public school?
That is a Catholic school.
Yeah, it's a Catholic school.
Yes,
so
they
get funded by the government.
Yeah, part-funded,
Part-funded,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So why would your mother send you to a Catholic school?
I wanted to go there because my best friend was going there, and I'd been to school with my best friend right the way through, and I wasn't brought up Catholic. I
just wanted to go to that school
to hang out with Jess. So.
Were there any surprises when you got there in year 9?
I mean, I guess it was the first time I'd been to an all-girls school.
So it's an all-girls school, right.
Yeah. The rest of the way through it was mixed. So that was different. I think, it does change, the way people interact a little bit, I think.
How does that change?
I don't know. I think in some ways people are a bit more relaxed, and then in some ways it kind of, can breed this cattiness. A little bit that I think happens at girls' schools.
So you're competing for the boys.
I don't know if it's that so much, or whether it's. I think people are mean in high school anyway, aren't they? So.
No. They're not mean. They're nice. There's no cyberbullying. Real bullying. I mean, I don't understand. Do you understand cyberbullying? Because I prefer just to bully.
Well, I discourage all forms of bullying, but it is a different dynamic to grow up with, you know, not just having to worry about getting beaten up at school, but coming home and getting beaten up on a screen in your own privacy of your room would be just
horrendous.
Horrible.
Yeah, you could just pull the gate in our time and that was it, you know?
Yeah.
If you got home, you got home.
Yeah, if you got home, you beat them home.
That's right.
You're safe.
Well, you're right, it's a 24-hour... They talk about the 24-hour news cycle, so it's a 24-hour bullying cycle.
Mm.
All right. So is there anything you excelled at high school? Overachieved.
It was the same sort of thing, just did lots of stuff. I did a lot of like improv, I guess. That was the thing that I liked best. I was in like the theatre sports team in high school. Yeah, and we tended to do pretty well. We were the
Christchurch did pretty well.
Well, no, it was my school's team. So it was the Marian College Theatre Sports team and the Christchurch competition that the Court Theatre runs in Christchurch. So, we used to do pretty well in that. And there was a Shakespeare competition that one year I did quite well in. So it was more the performing arts stuff, I think, in high school.
So you weren't maths A, maths B, physics and chemistry woman?
No, I wasn't. Right. Yeah, I did a bit of science too. I took biology and chemistry, but... Yeah.
You kind of mentioned that your school no longer exists. When did all this happen?
Well, it does still exist. It's just moved and it's now site sharing with another school. But that happened during the earthquake.
Which was what year?
The 2011 February.
So were you still at school or you just left?
So that day was a teachers only day. Right. So most...
But what year were you in, 11 or 12?
We go up to year 13 in New Zealand.
13? Yeah. An extra year to learn to read and write. I won't say anything about that.
I'm not quite sure how it all works out though, because we still finished when we're 18. I think it's at the primary end, but but we were still at school because I was with some of my other friends that did theatre sports, and we were running a coaching session with the junior theatre sports team. So most of the students had gone home, but we were there doing
So what happened?
I don't know, the ground just started shaking. And I'd just been volunteering at a YMCA holiday group, and they were 5 to 8 year olds. So we were teaching all the kids to get down on the ground and be a turtle, because we'd had the September earthquake, you know, and we were doing all of these drills. Yeah. And in this drama room, all of these young year 9 girls, they were, you know, running for the door, because that's the first thing, you know, in New Zealand that gets drilled into you in an earthquake. You go stand in the doorway. Right. But it was all glass doors. So, you know.
Oh, all the shards. Right.
And I remember just, you know, yelling at the girls to get down on the ground and be a turtle. And I remember sitting there and saw this big crevice opened up in the middle of our court in the school. And there was obviously a sewage pipe under there, because stuff just started spewing out of it. And we had to
this
kind
was
of,
from behind the glass you saw?
We could, where
it
I was...
It didn't split into your room, your room?
No. Yeah. Well, it might have under the ground, but it didn't open the actual...
So you just saw the earth open?
Pretty much, yeah.
So you are one of the few people who the earth has moved for. I am just amazed. And you're only, what, 17? And the earth moved for you.
I mean, I think the earth moved for quite a few people in Christchurch.
I'm sure
that
it did,
day.
Yeah. I mean, we're laughing about it, but obviously it's a huge leap. What did you think?
So we'd already had the September earthquake.
Right.
And, you know, we were so lucky in that one. There was damage, but no one was hurt. And I just remember after this earthquake turning around to my friend Jess, who was the reason I went to that school in the first place, said earlier, and being like, people are going to be dead in this one. We're not going to be as lucky as we were with that September one.
How wide was the crevice?
Oh, I would say maybe... Almost a metre, not quite.
A metre. So all of a sudden, you're in your room, all of a sudden the ground opens up a metre.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to die?
No.
Why not?
I
would have thought. I think me and Dale would have thought we were going to die, because we don't have these things. Well, not often.
Mm. I think we were really lucky that we were in the drama room and there was nothing. It was a big empty performance space, so there wasn't anything hanging off the roof that could have fallen down. The tiles in the roof were kind of just big sort of like foamy firm foam kind of things. So no, I wasn't worried about that at the time.
What time was it?
It was coming up to 1 o'clock.
One o'clock
in the afternoon.
So what happened over the next half hour to an hour at the school?
Most of the teachers had left because it was this teachers only day. They were protesting wages or something, I think. And the principal was still there, so she came out. We were there and a couple of other girls. And I remember being like, yep, no, I've got it. My grandparents lived in walking distance. All the phone lines go down, so you can't get in touch with anyone. And I remember thinking, I'll go there because that's where Mum will think to go, because Mum and my brother were on the opposite side of town. Yes.
So there was no coordination in the school, the principal?
No, because most of the students had gone home already.
So she just said, off you go.
Well, she wanted us to stay, I think.
Right.
Jess was staying with the Year 9 girls to make sure they all got home because her mum, she'd managed to get in touch with her mum and, you know, they were getting picked up. So I just went off and walked around to my grandparents' house. And
what did you see in that walk?
We actually went in the car for a little bit first, and then we got to a point where we couldn't go any further in the car because the flooding and stuff was so bad.
What do you mean the flooding?
Well, because the ground, all this liquefaction stuff comes out of the ground.
What's liquefaction? Explain to our listeners.
Oh my gosh, I'm not like an expert in.
No, well, basically the ground mashed potato.
Pretty much,
and all the fluid comes.
It's like
squashing
out.
A lemon.
Yeah,
it's been squashed and everything comes.
That's
out.
It. Yeah. So it all kind of pushes up to the surface, and it's just this. It's almost like quicksand. It's
Does it smell? No.
I mean, it doesn't smell, but there was a lot of like burst sewage pipes and things like that. There was a smell, but get out of the car, walk. Like, it was pretty deep. I remember having to pull my kilt up. It was definitely like over my knees.
Lucky you used to keep your collets high.
Yeah, exactly.
At least you didn't get
exactly.
See, your mother was right.
It was just training for this very moment.
Exactly. She was right all along.
And there were power lines down in the water, and I remember thinking, oh well, I hope the power's off because we're wading through that water and there's, you know, the power lines have come down.
Other people doing the same thing?
Yeah, just trying to get back, and then I got back to my grandparents' house.
And they were safe?
Well, no one was home when I got there. Right. My granddad arrived really shortly after. And we couldn't get into the house because their house had buckled so badly we couldn't open any of the doors with the keys. And my high school boyfriend at the time had come back there with me, and so he'd smashed through a door so we could get into
the house. Good to have a man in the house. Good to have a man in the house.
And then my nana got home and saw me and my granddad standing there, and she sort of just collapsed in the driveway. That's one of my most vivid memories of that day,
collapsed.
I think, was my nana just seeing us there and just...
Oh, she was so relieved.
That's
dramatic.
It's all a bit of a blur after that, really. We did walk back home to our house eventually.
Right. So I can't remember how many... were there many deaths?
Yeah. I can't remember the exact number, but it was 180-something, I think.
So when did you go into the city centre?
A few days? Not for a long time.
Not for a long time.
Yeah.
Were you surprised when you went in?
Yeah, I'm still surprised when I go home and go into the city centre.
Why? Things haven't been repaired?
It's getting a lot better. Christchurch is getting a lot more vibrant, and every time I go back, particularly, you know, over the last few years, it's been like huge leaps in terms of the development that's going on there. But it's just like, because I haven't been living there, I think, through Christchurch's recovery, it's like going back to a place that I don't recognise every time I go back because it's changed so much every time.
And is the liquefaction still an issue?
No. That's all been cleaned up.
All right, but I've just meant you haven't got soggy ground you can't build on.
Oh, well, I mean, there was a huge area that they've declared a red zone and everyone in the area had to move. And so that's all just grass now and, like, tree lines kind of around where houses used to be.
So what did they... Was earthquakes excluded from the insurance policies?
Yeah, so some people had problems, actually. A lot of people were covered. My mum, actually, unfortunately, was someone that wasn't. Had some issues because they moved. People that moved after the September earthquake, there were some problems getting insurance again and confusion around whether that insurance policy had been picked up. And so I know that was a drama we had, and other households had similar problems, yeah.
So you decide to leave a sinking ship in 2011.
Well, not quite. So 2012, I worked for a year to save.
Can you tell us what you were doing?
I was working in a contact centre.
A contact centre
for an electricity company.
That basically mean you ring up people and cold calling, is it?
No, they were calling me, but I tell you what, people don't tend to call their electricity company when things are going right. So
really? I can't. Most people ring up and say, oh, the electricity is great today. No, they don't do that.
So that was an interesting job, first job out of school. Did that for...
You were desperate to leave, weren't you?
Yeah, so save that money. And then I actually moved to Malawi for 7 months. Wow.
Malawi?
Yes, Malawi.
Why?
Because she's doing good work.
I don't know. I think...
What brought Malawi on your radar?
I think just... like high school Nadine just wanted to go to somewhere that was like as different as I possibly could find. And I found a gap year program and just sort of decided that that was what I was going to do.
Did you have all your injections?
Yes, I had 9 injections to go to Malawi.
Good girl.
Yeah.
Can you tell everybody what you needed to go through to be a aid worker there?
9 jabs. I think there were 3 rabies jabs, typhoid, hepatitis boosters. Yeah. I can't remember now.
You really wanted to get out of New Zealand. All right.
I did,
Can you tell us your first impression when you... Did you actually fly in?
Yes, yeah.
When you got out of... Because I find this fascinating. What was your first impression when you got out of the doors, you know, out of the airport doors and you... Bang.
I think it was the... heat and the smell, I think, was the first thing that hit me. I found that, having done a little bit of travel and lived in a few different countries now, that, like, places have their own smell, you know, and that tends to be the really distinctive thing for me when I go somewhere new. The first few weeks, I think you're still in a bit of a bubble because we were doing sort of an induction kind of thing as a big group, and we were in the capital city of Malawi. So I loved it, you know. I was with everyone. It was
good thing for a 19-20 year old. Yeah,
absolutely.
What do they think of this tall red-headed woman in their midst? Where do they send you in Malawi after the induction?
So I got sent to a community called Mua. Uh-huh. And I was working at a school for deaf children. So learnt sign language pretty quickly over there. And that was, I think, the first time, the day that I arrived in Mua, that I experienced, like, real culture shock. Because you hear people talking about culture shock. And I've never had it when I've just been travelling somewhere, I don't think. But, like, turning up in this village in the middle of nowhere and being like, okay, this is me for the next 7 months. Like, you know.
Can you tell us about the village? What was it like? I mean, structure-wise, not socially, but structure-wise. Was it mud? Was it tin shacks? What was it?
I mean, it was a real mixture because I was mostly based in the school. The standard of housing was, like, really good for Malawi standards. So it was brick sort of houses with tin roofs. But if you went out into the village space, there were mud houses. And
houses.
Yeah, some of the other volunteers were living in mud houses,
but
mud
floors. In the school.
I had quite a nice house. I was very lucky.
So what was the main reason for deafness in Malawi?
Malaria.
Malaria.
Yeah,
right.
That's a big one. When malaria goes cerebral, it can affect your sight and your hearing.
So a lot of kids?
Yeah, definitely more. The school used to have to turn down heaps of kids every year because there just wasn't, you know, the space for them. So,
And you lasted 7 months.
I was there for 7 months.
Was that your contract or did you?
That was the contract.
And then you decided to go back home?
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to have stayed for longer, but I was running out of money. So.
But what did they think of this tall, red-headed New Zealander?
Everyone was lovely, you know. They'd had foreigners in the school before, so right. It wasn't like they'd never...
Surprise, yeah.
Yeah. It was more when you were sort of walking through the market or getting on public transport or something like that. I guess the school was kind of its own little hub and in its own little bubble. So that was fine. Yeah, but you would get some funny looks, you know, when you're going to buy your tomatoes or...
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Look, it's 4:32. This is Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au on Dale's 46th birthday, which is the 3rd of April. And we're chatting with Nadine Rutter, and she doesn't know what the word Rutter means. So if you do know what the derivation of the name Rutter, could you ring on 9419 8377, 9419 8377, and let the person who answers the phone know, and they'll tell us, and we'll teach you something. All right, back to New Zealand. What happened then?
After Malawi. So I came back, and I still hadn't entirely made up my mind about what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to study something, but I wasn't sure yet. So I was working for a little while, and then I stumbled across this book called New Zealander Abroad, and it was about... VSA, right. Who are New Zealand's international development volunteering, right. Similar to AVI or Scope Global that you guys have here.
But you weren't spies.
What?
You weren't spies.
Spies?
No, seriously, in the 60s and 70s, the US had spies all over the world in these so-called... you weren't spying.
No, I wasn't
I just
spying
want to clear that
on
up.
Anybody. No, I promise.
No, you weren't spying for
I promise.
Anybody. No, you'd be amazed.
Yeah, so we found this book, and this guy had just written this amazing book, had done this amazing stuff, and he'd studied development studies, international development. And I was like, well, I'm going to do that because I want a life like that.
That's this thing for adventure. I don't understand. Because you had a pretty boring upbringing, to be honest.
Yeah, I did.
You know, there's nothing spectacular apart from an earthquake.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what got you into this area?
I honestly, I don't know. Obviously that Malawi trip, and I was like, I loved living there. Found this book.
Right. Did your development course?
Did
where?
Development studies.
Where did you do that?
Victoria University of Wellington.
And how long did that last?
That took me about 3.5 years.
Three and a half years. Oh, I think you kind of did a big bit of backsliding there. Shouldn't have taken 3.5 years.
It should have taken 3 years, but exactly. I changed from a Bachelor of Arts to a Bachelor of Science, so I had
about
to rejig my courses.
Yeah, about time. I can understand why you didn't want a Bachelor of Arts from Victoria University. It's almost as good as a Bachelor of Arts from Melbourne University. But that's another question, so I'll get hung for that. So how did you make a buck during this period? How did you survive? Did you have a rich mum and dad?
Oh, no. No. We're quite lucky in New Zealand. I qualified for the student allowance, so I would get a couple of $100 for free from the government each week.
You don't have a hex debt?
I don't know what that is.
You are such a fortunate human being. You see, it's free university education, basically.
Well, I had to pay for my degree, but I was supported.
What do you mean pay for your degree?
So I still had to pay for the courses. Yeah, so I've got a student debt.
So you got a student debt?
Yes, I do, but I didn't have to take out loans for living costs because I had that.
So you had support. You didn't have to work in dead-end part-time jobs and fail at university because you were supported.
Yeah, I mean, and I did work part-time as well because that wasn't quite enough.
No, that's good.
But, yeah, I didn't have to work, 30 hours a week and try and study. I just did a little bit.
So you spent all that time in New Zealand, or did you kind of wander off?
I did. So I was really lucky I got selected after Cyclone Pam. Gareth Morgan, who's a philanthropist over in New Zealand, ran a thing with UNICEF where he had donated dollar for dollar up to $1 million to a relief fund, and New Zealanders donated $1 million. So as a thing around that, he took two people that had donated over to Vanuatu on their donor trip.
Right.
So I went over there with UNICEF and Gareth.
What year was this?
Oh, my goodness, I can't remember. You're really testing me now.
Well, yeah, you're young. You should be able to remember. You're not my age. You've got no excuse, Nadine. 2015?
Yeah, that was what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah, 15 or 16.
So had you been to Vanuatu before?
No, I hadn't. different.
And again, what did you think when you stepped off the plane?
I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. I was there, and it was called the New Hebrides, and it was an English-French colony. Yeah, that's how old I am.
Wow. So before the 80s then?
Yeah, in the late 70s.
Yeah, wow.
Mid 70s, yeah. So you stepped off the plane.
Yes.
What was your job?
So we were just going around with Gareth and UNICEF to see how that money had been spent, that aid money, what was learnt from how that money was spent, what could be done differently next time if there was another disaster like this.
You've seen where the people didn't pocket the money and it actually went for the people who needed it, basically.
Pretty much,
and
yeah.
Were you quite happy with the way it was being distributed and run?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you seem a bit hesitant there.
I think there's always room for improvement in any kind of international development endeavour. Otherwise, we would have figured it out by now. We've been doing international development, I say in sort of quotation marks, since the 50s, and we still haven't solved a lot of problems. So I think it's good to remain critical about these things.
Well, you need to be critical because that's a big issue, isn't it? A lot of people they use it as an excuse not to donate. It's not an excuse. You can always find ethical groups that you can actually funnel funds to.
Absolutely.
If you do your homework.
Yeah.
All right. How long were you there for? A few weeks?
A bit over a week.
And what did you think of the devastation you saw?
Yeah, I mean, I think because I'd seen disaster devastation in Christchurch before, you know, it was, there were obviously some similarities, but there's obviously a huge difference when it's happening in a place like that where you've got real issues around food security and health and, you know, what happens when in areas, you know, flooded in a malaria region versus, you know, somewhere like home. So, I guess it just gave me an awareness about how much more complex it is when things like this happen. And,
all right. So, so you finish your development course. So what's your first placement?
So I applied for the VSA Univol program, which was amazing because that was how VSA have a graduate program called Univol.
Oh, right. Okay.
Went off to Vanuatu.
Yeah. Okay.
I said I would really love to go to Vanuatu if they had a placement there for me because I loved it so much the last time I sort of directed all of my coursework.
Which island did you find yourself on?
I was on Santo, Espiritu Santo.
The big
in the
one.
North. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
How'd you find that?
It was, it was great. It was an amazing year.
This is what, 2016?
No, this was last year.
So that's your first placement, 2018.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell us what life's like there, because I don't think people would actually know. They'd be amazed.
Yeah. The community is amazing. Like, I guess, you know, having mostly, apart from the Malawi experience, lived in cities, it's just people know who you are. Everyone knows who you are. They know where you're going. They know what you're doing. Some stranger that you've never met before will come up to you in the street and be like, oh, hey, you're the girl that works at the municipal. I've just been to my garden and picked some beans. Do you want some? Mm. You know, like things like that just don't happen in New Zealand.
No, they don't happen here.
Yeah.
Well, I got some tomatoes yesterday, but that's a different thing. They weren't picked for me.
Yeah.
They were just given to me. So, but tell us what life is like there. What's village life like?
Yeah, so I wasn't in a village. I was in Luganville. So
right, the main.
Yeah, that's sort of the hub of Santo. And I was working in the municipal.
Which is what?
Which is the government, like the city council, I guess. Doing
what?
I was working for the National Youth Council.
Right.
So I was helping to establish a Northern Office branch and designing programs targeted mostly at young people that had dropped out of school and applying for grant funding so those programs could actually happen.
Who are you applying to, the government or outside? Anyway,
whoever was willing to give us the money.
All right. Now, I may be a bit confused. Is this the bungee jumping island?
No, that's further. That's another one. Yeah,
right,
didn't make it to see that, unfortunately.
You didn't make it to see that. Do you know about the bungee jumping island, Diane?
Is that with the vines?
Yeah, the original bungee jumpers.
Yeah.
Not these New Zealand wannabes.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I've seen footage of it, but I've never been. Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
It is. I can tell you it is amazing. You think they're going to die.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do. All right, so how long did you last there for?
That was a 10-month assignment.
10-month assignment. So you're a volunteer. So what's provided? Accommodation and food?
Yeah, accommodation and like a living cost allowance.
A living cost allowance. And that's enough to survive on.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So that's last year. So what have you been doing this year?
Well, I came back.
Where?
To New Zealand.
Right.
A couple of my friends had asked me to be their celebrant, so I've
Are
married
you a celebrant?
Them. Well, I became a celebrant just so I could do this.
Let's go back. When did you become a celebrant?
I applied to become a celebrant while I was in Vanuatu.
That wasn't enough for you. The fact that you're trying to organise all these programs, organise the funding, living on a shoestring allowance, so you decide to become a celebrant.
Yes.
Now, isn't there a course?
In New Zealand, it's quite different.
What happened? You just applied.
Well, yeah, so there's a few different ways. So if you want to become an independent celebrant, you've got to do an interview. But because I wasn't there to do an interview, I had to become a, like, church celebrant. So,
sure. So does the church play a role in your life?
Not really.
Not really. So what church did you adopt?
Well, there's online.
Online.
The Universal Life Church. Anyone can sort of become a minister.
Online.
Online. I don't think you can do it in Australia, and I'm pretty sure New Zealand's going to, like, stop this from being a thing that you can do pretty soon.
So you just surfed the net, found this bunch of oddballs, became a minister, paid your $10...
I mean, more or less, yes.
Yeah, more or less. And then you said to the New Zealand government, I'm a minister in this church.
Yes.
And you get a rubber stamp saying you're a celebrant.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty much how it worked. I had to, I am a minister and I have people in my congregation that...
you are a minister?
Yes.
You have a congregation?
Technically.
Oh, I was thinking about joining. What about you, Dale? I mean, at my age, you need to have something to look forward to. I mean, I could come and... Maybe I could play that flute you never got. And sing in the choir. Do you want me?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
The more the merrier.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
This looks like a scam. I don't want to.
It's all legal.
Yeah, I know, but it's still a scam. I don't want to out you. So you're a legally qualified celebrant.
I'm a legally registered celebrant currently. Maybe not after this.
after this interview. Right. So what does that mean? You can do funerals, weddings,
bar misters. Just weddings and civil unions, pretty much.
But you can't do funerals.
Well, I don't know if there's like legal requirements around who it can.
Oh, there is in Australia.
Well, I mean, that's who deals with the body and stuff. Yeah, that's different to
like
running the ritual.
I've done a few funerals. You're right.
Mm.
You don't need a celebrant.
Mm.
Yeah, I just worry that they're kind of the cask. The person in there is dead. That's my only worry. When I run these funerals, I've been a bit suspicious about, like, it's like your ministership.
Mm.
All right, so you're a minister.
Mm-hmm.
Good. You're a celebrant, and you went back to New Zealand to marry your friends.
Yes.
You charge them a fee, hopefully?
No.
You're kidding.
That's no, it's not a tax dodge or anything like that.
No, definitely not. Look, I don't think Nadine is a tax dodger. She's not a high-income earner.
No,
she's never really made that great. So you've never been to you hadn't been to Australia?
I had the girl that I was living with over in Malawi, was an Australian, and she lived in Melbourne. So we've been back and forth visiting each other a few times over the years.
So when was your first visit to Melbourne?
It would have been 2014, the year after I got back.
What did you think coming to a big city for once in your life?
I don't think we actually spent much time in the city. We were out camping out around the Great Ocean Road somewhere.
Oh, nice.
Went through Lawn and yeah.
What, you come to Melbourne, you don't even enjoy the city, you just go camping. Why don't you just stay in New Zealand? That's what they do, isn't it?
That's one of the reasons I moved to Victoria was...
camp?
No, I came down to go to a festival at Lawn and driving down the Great Ocean Road, and I'd already done all of Queensland and all of New South Wales, and I thought, well, I'm going to check this place out because it looked beautiful. So once I got back to New South Wales, I packed up my kit bag and moved down here. And it was a Great Ocean Road.
So beautiful around there too.
Yeah.
Isn't New Zealand beautiful? I've been to New Zealand. I thought New Zealand was much more beautiful than the Great Ocean Road.
New Zealand's beautiful, but it's so cold.
What's wrong
with
that?
See, that's a draw card for me.
Oh, no, no, no.
What's wrong with that?
No, I'm not into that. No.
All right. So what are you doing here today?
What am I doing here today? Yeah. Well, you guys have invited me here because I've kind of fallen into this West Papua campaign.
When did you fall into the West Papua campaign?
I sort of thought, right, I'm moving to Australia. I've got to find something to do with my spare time.
Right, overachieving. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've moved.
Do too many things.
So you're
a
permanent resident.
Well, New Zealanders can just, move over.
Yeah,
but
you don't get social security benefits, you know.
No, we don't.
No,
and I
approve of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Because you're New Zealanders, aren't you? You're not one of us. All right. And you're a celebrant. And you found that your celebrant qualifications weren't recognised here, obviously.
They're not, yep. That's
so
correct.
So what have you been doing here?
So I went to a protest that I saw outside the Indonesian...
down in St Kilda?
No, it was close to town, I think.
Yeah, St Kilda.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Near Queens Road.
I still haven't oriented myself. Queens Road.
So why would you bother...
Well,
as a guest in this country.
It was actually pouring down with rain.
Why would you bother, as a guest in this country, mm-hmm. to go to a protest mm-hmm. regarding West Papua? Did you know anything about West Papua?
Yes. So
how did you know about West Papua?
So as part of my degree, I did quite a few courses in Pacific Studies.
Right.
So learnt a bit about West Papua through that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously having spent some time in Vanuatu, it's a big conversation that happens over there, particularly, I was working in government.
That's right.
Yeah, so...
Because Vanuatu's pivotal role,
yes,
don't you?
Absolutely.
Were you there when the three factions turned up? To bury the hatchet?
I don't think I was around then. And that would have happened not
about
in
2015,
some... 2015, yeah, 16. Yeah.
All right, just before we go on, I'm a bit disappointed in our listeners, Dale. I gave them some homework. I wanted to know where the name Rutter, RUTTER, look it up on the net, look it up in a dictionary.
You're after the etymological root, I believe.
There, are they rat catchers? That's what I want to know, whether I'm talking to the descendants... of a long line of rat catchers or not. Rutter, RUTTER. Can you ring 94198377 and let us know? That way we know there is one listener to the program. Okay. All right, so you, what did you do? Yeah, you came here. You went to this protest.
Yes.
And did they look at you strangely?
No, not really. Well, my partner came over to Australia about 10 days after I did. And we had literally just arrived the night before this protest. And
right.
We stayed in an Airbnb close to the airport because he got in quite late. So right. I dragged him to the protest first thing in the morning with all of his luggage. So they looked at him a bit strange because they're like, who is this person that's turned up with all of these bags?
Is he a New Zealander?
No, he's from the States.
It gets worse. Look, our listeners have saved us.
I've come through.
Yeah, Rutter. Dictionary.
Oh.
A trooper or a marine cadet, I think.
Okay.
Also,
I was worried about this.
It's a Canadian term for a moose. On heat.
Oh my God.
This is Terry from Mooney Pond.
Thanks.
That's right, you rut. That's
thanks,
right.
Terry.
Thanks, Terry. At least she's not a rat catcher.
It could be worse.
All right. So, obviously, you get talking to the lads and lasses outside the Indonesian embassy.
Yes.
The federal police are wondering why you've got all these bags, because they'll be there thinking you're some type of terrorist. So, you make contact.
Mm-hmm.
When was this?
Oh, goodness me, this must have been a couple of months ago. I think I moved over in late January. So it would have been the first couple of weeks of February, I think, that happened. Yeah.
It's actually not a marine cadet. It's a marine chart. So you're either a trooper,
mm-hmm.
a marine chart,
mm-hmm.
or a moose on heat.
I don't really know where to go with that, to be entirely honest.
We shouldn't have asked.
Oh, it's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. All right, let's get back. Colin, could you do me a favour? Could you take off your right boot?
This, oh, my tattoo.
Yeah, what's all this about?
This
is live radio. You can see this tattoo. It looks like a wheel of some type.
People think that, but it's actually a sun. I got that done in the Cook Islands when I was over there on a holiday.
Is that a Cook Island sun?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the guy that did it designed it. I was just like, do a sun. I don't really care what it looks like.
A canvas.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, the actual middle looks like a... luckily, it's got four legs because it looked like a three-legged Sicilian or Isle of Man.
Oh, that's a that's a Marquesian cross, which
a what cross?
It's called a Marquesian cross.
Right? Yeah, okay, yeah. All right. Yeah, I've never actually got somebody to take off their shoes and interview.
Well, there's a first for everything.
Okay, so you're doing a gig on Saturday.
Yes.
At the West Papuandu for the Rent Collective and potential Rent Collective members. That's this Saturday. My apologies. This Sunday, the 7th of April, 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. You are the main guest speaker. What's your topic?
I think I'm probably just going to introduce myself because I've kind of
appeared
out of nowhere.
You've done that. Look, all the members of the Rent Collective will be listening to you here, so you have to do more than introduce yourself.
And then I'm going to talk about a campaign that we've been running with the office regarding the upcoming UN General Assembly and the motion that's being raised by Vanuatu and some other Pacific Island states to put West Papua back on the decolonisation agenda.
Right.
Yeah.
It's been very hard. How are you going, getting the necessary numbers in the General Assembly?
Yeah. I mean, there's. I feel like, you know, we're not going to know until a lot closer to the time which way it's going to swing. Obviously there are Pacific Island states that are supporting it. There's the African Caribbean. Group looking like they're gonna.
How about the European Union? Any luck?
Yeah. I'm not really sure. In a position to comment on that stage, at this point.
All right,
yeah.
We'll see. It's gonna be because you need a 2/3 majority before you can raise it in the General Assembly.
Yeah. So yes. So our campaign is about getting Australia to get on board with that.
Well, look, I wish you luck. I'll tell you why.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you a story I've repeated, maybe not on this program, that about 5 years ago, a very well-known female activist in Darwin who'd been involved in the West Papua independence struggle for many years was killed in a bicycle accident.
Mm.
And an independent member of the Senate wished to pay his respects and condolences. Mm-hmm. And he had the word West Papua.
Mm-hmm.
In the condolence speech, and both the Liberal National Party and the ALP refused to endorse the condolence unless the word West Papua was removed.
Mm.
So let's see what I mean. You've got to understand, Indonesia is the biggest trading partner, and they declared war, haven't they? They've declared war on West Papuan independence, and they have been rampaging through the jungles of West Papua as we speak over the last few months.
Yeah.
So it's this Sunday, Sunday.
Yes, that is it.
1 p.m. Mm-hmm. It's at the office, which is bankrolled by the West Papuan Rent Collective, which you can be a member of.
Mm-hmm.
It's at 838 Collins Street.
Mm-hmm.
Just walk around the back. There's the big meeting room out the back. There's the food there. If you're a member of the West Papuan Rent Collective, you get a free feed.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, $15 for lunch. You don't have to have lunch. Mm-hmm. You can bring your own bickies if you wish. And then we listen to Nadine and many other important guest speakers. You know, I've actually got a role in that list.
Yeah.
It's my job to find another 15 new members for the West Papuan Rent Collective, or you're going to be evicted. It's that simple. But I'll speak about that.
Wow.
Well, they won't be evicted, but I'm exaggerating. But for a dollar, look, you're thinking for a dollar a day.
Yeah.
A dollar a day, we allow the West Papuan activists to run their struggle the way they want to and not worried about the rent. So see before you buy.
Mm-hmm.
General invitation from Nadine. Come and see Nadine speak. tell us what's happening. 838 Collins Street. That's the Docklands end of Collins Street.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Through the front door, around the back.
Yep.
There'll be hundreds of people there. Well,
so.
Yeah. Well, you haven't been to these dudes. I've been to all of them.
I've been to all of them.
You've never been to one. So it's about time we showed Nadine what Australians are really like. I mean, we walk the walk and we just don't talk the talk like your mob.
Mm-hmm.
Look, and I also like to extend my condolences as an individual and as the program for the slaughter that occurred in Christchurch over 2 weeks ago. Just an extraordinary loss of life for nothing. Mm. Extraordinary. So I'd just like to extend our condolences. I'm sure it was just amazing to see the New Zealand community coming together. I mean, just amazing.
Yeah.
We'll see where that goes. So, Nadine, Rutter,
yes.
With young people like you in the world, mm-hmm. with your United States partner, who we begrudgingly accept in this country. It's not his fault he was born in the United States.
He's a good one, I promise.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what they say. You know what they say about the only good American is a live American. But that's another story. Look, an old man like me and a middle-aged woman like Dale is 46 today. We feel really pleased that when we shuffle off, there are people like you who are willing to continue the struggle to improve people's lives, not just here but around the world. So, Nadine, I congratulate you. It was a pleasure talking to you. I'm sorry we took the piss out of you, but that's the way it goes.
I'm used to it. Don't worry. I've been wearing my culottes up around
All right. I won't ask you about the grazes on your knee. I thought that was a bit personal.
No, I just fell over walking into work, unfortunately. I wish there was a better story to it than that.
No, fair enough. Okay. Thank you very much. It's 4:58. This is Radical Australia. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Come and listen to Nadine Rutter talk on Sunday the 7th of April at the West Barpoint Independence Centre, 838 Collins Street, Docklands at 1 p.m. See you there.
Struggling for years.